Welcome to OncoFarm. I'm your host, John Bizarre. I'm a professor of pharmacy practice here at our supporting sponsor of OncoFarm, ETSU's Bill Gatton College of Pharmacy. It is the first Thursday of March, one of my top 2 months of the year. And we have a notable bladder cancer updates to talk about. I'll also pass along that amivantamab was approved for exon 20 insertion mutations with chemotherapy for metastatic non-small cell lung cancer, and inotuzumab ozogamicin got an approval for ALL in the pediatric population. But I'm going to talk about two bladder cancer approvals. I'll talk about enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab in the first-line setting for metastatic urothelial cancer. Now, that FDA approval came in December, but we just had the big publication this week in the New England Journal of Medicine, which has been anticipated, we shall say. And then today, or yesterday, FDA approved nivolumab in combination with cisplat and gemcitabine for unresectable metastatic urothelial carcinoma. That was based off of KEYNOTE-901, which we've covered on this podcast. So kind of from a historical perspective, years and years and years ago, we had this regimen called MVAC, which was methotrexate, vinblastine, doxorubicin, and cisplat. And that was the standard of care for metastatic bladder cancer. Then there was dose-dense MVAC, right? And then we had gemcitabine and cisplatin was as good as MVAC, but a lot less toxic. So everyone was kind of using, you know, platinum and gemcitabine for these metastatic patients. And then we had the data from one of the JAVELIN studies where maintenance of avelumab after people got platinum and gemcitabine, if they didn't have disease progression, they went on maintenance of avelumab, and that had an overall survival benefit. And that was kind of the first that kind of kicked the door open towards moving immune checkpoint inhibitors into the frontline setting. Now, that avelumab study was either carbo or cisplatin. This nivolumab approval is just with gemcitabine and cisplatin. It's the first one to show an overall survival benefit when you give the immune checkpoint inhibitor up front. Now, that overall survival benefit and PFS benefit was very, very modest. As we've talked about in the past, the median OS was 21.7 months for those who got Nivo plus cisgem compared to 18.9 months for those that got cisgem alone. Now, those are all a cisplatin-eligible patient population, as opposed to the maintenance of avelumab study was either cis or carboplatin-eligible. We have now to transition to the EV-302. This was a really fantastic and large improvement overall survival. And this was presented, I think it was at ESMO in the fall. We talked about it on the podcast. Then when the data came out, and I probably mentioned it when the FDA approval happened in December, said we're waiting to see the publication to see what's what. So just as a brief reminder, these folks are getting enfortumab vedotin, the Nectin-4 calicheamycin derivative antibody target on days 1 and 8, pembrolizumab on day 1 every 3 weeks for, you know, almost an indefinite number of cycles. There's no limit on how much enfortumab vedotin they could get, and it's basically 2 years of pembro. And then they're randomized to, you know, 6 cycles of platinum-based chemo. So either gem with cis or gemcitabine with cis or carboplatin based on, you know, is their creatinine clearance above 60, et cetera, then they could get cisplatin. So right away, when you look at this, you have almost indefinite treatment versus 6 months or a finite period of treatment with cisplatin. Now, when this came out and it was published, we saw these big separations of PFS and big separations of overall survival. And my cynical approach was, all right, let's see if the cisplatin patients really benefited. And we saw at ESMO, whether you had cis or carboplatin, there was a ton of benefit in the patients who got enfortumab vedotin and pembro up front. And then, of course, you know, platinum-based chemo is not the standard of care in this study now. The standard of care should have been platinum-based chemo plus maintenance avelumab. Well, it turns out they did actually, to their credit, allow for the maintenance of avelumab in geographic areas where it was available. So that would be certainly the United States and other parts of the world that I don't know, but other parts of the world where maintenance avelumab is available, is approved, and is affordable and paid for. Okay. So a couple more details about this study. You know, upper tract disease, so above the bladder, so ureter, renal, pelvis, was 27% of people in this study. Many other bladder cancer studies or urothelial carcinoma studies will cap that at 20%. So it's somewhat enriched with upper tract disease, which is a harder to treat pathology, we think. So certainly add some credence to treating those patients like we treat our traditional bladder cancer patients. we'll talk about the big picture results shortly, but I'll say that and the subsequent therapy was the big thing that I was waiting for. Baseline demographics are pretty equally matched, and what you would expect. About 55% of people were cisplatin eligible. Now, our median progression-free survival here is 12.5 versus 6.3 months. There's almost a plateau in progression-free survival, you know, for enfortumab vedotin. You know, the 12-month PFS rate is 50%. The 18-month is 44%. So we are seeing, you know, some really robust benefit here with upfront enfortumab vedotin and pembrolizumab. And if we look at our overall survival data, you know, 12-month overall survival, 78% versus 61%. That's a delta of almost 17%, which is vast, which is large in a metastatic disease. And it's 70% versus 45% at 18 months. So really, really a huge magnitude of impact. And even if you critique, hey, this folks getting platinum-based chemo, they should have had maintenance of avelumab. You know, that was available for maybe a third of the patients in the study got maintenance of avelumab. And you can kind of see that in the subgroup analysis when you look at geographic region. You know, the hazard ratio for overall survival for everybody in the population, the entire population, is 0.47. If you look at the hazard ratio for survival for North America, it's 0.71, and it's 0.4 and 0.41 for Europe and the rest of the world, respectively. So there certainly is some blunting of the benefit in those that got maintenance avelumab. But even if that subgroup was powered for statistical significance, if that hazard ratio is 0.71, there's still statistically significant improvement, or there would be if it was powered, with enfortumab vedotin pembro up front. So it's really hard to see enfortumab vedotin pembro not being the first line regimen of choice for your average patient with metastatic bladder cancer after this study. I've been skeptical after the press release and after the publication, but now seeing this is frontline standard of care. I think everyone's going to agree with that. Really surprising, really impressive, and I don't always drill down on response rate because overall survival is probably more important, but we see a 29% complete response rate with EV enfortumab vedotin, with EV pembro, compared to 12.5% with chemo. You know, you're more than doubling complete response rate. You have a toxicity profile that is not benign with two target agents. So we actually have, you know, peripheral neuropathy 50% with enfortumab vedotin versus 10% with chemo. And again, many of those patients are getting carbo, where you'll have less neuropathy than with cisplatin. Alopecia, 33% with EV pembro versus 8%. Rash, 32% versus 3%. Diarrhea, 27% versus 11%. We do see more hematologic toxicity with chemotherapy, but we're also only given a limited number of cycles with chemotherapy. So it'll be interesting to see maybe when the patient report outcomes come out about this, about quality of life for these folks. But even if there is some detriment in quality of life, many of them probably would still prefer, I would guess, EV pembro, because there is a robust improvement in overall survival. There is, if we look at, to further critique this, if we look at subsequent therapy, you have to look at second line therapy here. We're looking at overall survival. You know, of the 440 people or so on the chemo arm, 70% got subsequent therapy, and most of those got a PD-1 or PD-L1 inhibitor, and like 30% got maintenance of avelumab. So, you know, the chemo folks, you know, that control, most of them are getting treated the way they should be in the second line setting with a drug like pembro or nivolumab. So, you know, you would have preferred to see maintenance of avelumab up front for everybody. But even if you did that, you're still, I think, going to see an overall survival benefit with EV pembro compared to chemo. Maybe not as robust as we see here, but, you know, there's a nice editorial in this week's edition of the New England Journal of Medicine where, you know, they say this has got to be standard of care. This is now what every other new bladder cancer regimen should be compared to when it comes to FDA approval. But certainly has, you know, a very different toxicity profile than maybe we're used to. And these toxicities are exaggerated compared to just either agent alone. So you could imagine somebody with diabetic peripheral neuropathy who maybe is not a great candidate for EV pembro because half of them developed neuropathy. So, you know, this is kind of going through the timeline here because when drugs come out and regimens come out, you know, and there's the press release, there's always some hype about how this is the new standard of care. And I always am critical of that, and I have to give credit here. This regimen is going to be, I think, a new standard of care in our bladder cancer patients, and with a high percentage of folks with upper tract disease, there's activity there. You know, there's no difference in apparent efficacy between low or high PD-L1 expression. They do that there. There's, you know, benefit in all subgroups. The only kind of abnormality, which I point out, was that a little bit of an outlier of maybe with the North American region, not doing as well compared to chemo as the rest of the world and in Europe. But certainly as I think that editorial says, not a step forward, but a leap forward in treating metastatic bladder cancer patients. And they bring up a great point that this treatment of enfortumab vedotin pembro, based on one study, is something like 3 or 4 times more expensive than a year of platinum-based chemo with avelumab maintenance. So if we're going to spend that much money as a payer, say you're in whatever country, or you're paying for healthcare, or your insurance, you know, cooperative or whatever, is there a way to better identify folks who are going to benefit from EV pembro? Are there folks who have, you know, how long are these complete responses lasting? And are some of them having a long-term, you know, no evidence of disease, which is an incredible feeling to be able to deliver somebody with a metastatic cancer, because there's going to be a ton of value in that for them as well. So certainly, what was this guy's name? I ought to give him credit. Who said this? Gunther Niegisch, I think. I hope I said that right. Said a huge leap forward. So, enfortumab vedotin pembro, I'm no longer skeptic. I'm on board. Move forward with this. That's what I have for this week. A couple bladder cancer updates. A space where we've seen a lot of a change in the last couple of years, and that's the nature of oncology, isn't it? Thank you so much for listening. You can follow me on the app formerly known as Twitter at PharmDeetNib, and you can follow the podcast on X, Instagram, and Threads at OncoPharmPod. And until I talk to you again, remember, doses matter.